We learned yesterday about this whole matter of Mr. Tennis, an animal that is dangerously ill, but not, but doesn't have any of the specific traits that, any of the specific conditions that would make it a traitor, which we're going to learn in the next paragraph, but just the animal is weak and sick. So we said it is kosher, and we went through a whole discussion how indeed we know that it is. But when you shecht it, we said you have to have afterwards some pukus. You have to have some movement, some like jerky movement afterwards to show that it was alive, still doing the shechita. Otherwise, there's a concern that maybe it died at the beginning of the shechita or early enough in it where it wasn't a kosher shechita yet, where it died before that. We talked at the end the reason for the difference is because, first of all, again, there's no actual noticeable nothing missing, nothing broken, nothing punctured or whatever in any specific organ that you could point to. And there are, in fact, Rishonim who say that the idea is that with Mesukenes, conceivably it could be cured. Anyway, so now that we discussed that, now let's get into this matter of Pirkus. So the Gemara says, Ashtukhinu Shmuel the Talmidim of Rav. Shmuel one time met up with the Talmidim of Rav. He asked them, my Omer Rav the Mesukenes. What did Rav say about these details of Mesukenes? About what kind of Pirkus there needs to be? They told him, this might have been while Rav was alive, or this might have been after Rav passed away. The Beshuda Goyen tells us that Shmuel outlived Rav by 7 years, so this may have been after Rav, because the Pashtos otherwise, if it had been while Rav was alive, Shmuel could have asked him himself, so maybe we're talking about after Rav passed away, and so Shmuel just has to ask Rav's coming. Anyway, Omrulay, they told him, Hochi Omer Rav, this is what Rav said, what you need in order for the shechita of a mesukenes, in order for us to know that it was a valid shechita, goya, it has to be that the animal moves, or whatever the equivalent noise is for different types of animals, v'hitila ri'i, or defecate, v'kishkesha ba'ozna, or it moves its ear, wiggles its ear, hareza pirkus, so all of those things are called pirkus, and therefore this animal is mutter to eat. Tosfos points out. Now we had in the Mishnah several different opinions. We had Reb Shimon Gamliel, for example, saying that it needs to move its foreleg or its hind leg. But Tosfos points out that apparently what Rav is saying over here would work even according to Reb Shimon Gamliel. It doesn't dafka mean that it has to be a foreleg or a hind leg. Any of these things would also count for the purpose. So Shmuel tells them, if Abba requiring it to wiggle its ear, Abba is his name for Rav. So Rashi explains this was he would call Rav that by respect. Abba literally means father, so he would use that as a title of respect for Rav, who was his senior. On the other hand, Tosfos brings the other way around, that actually Rav's personal name was Abba. And then just the opposite, then Shmuel and Rav are colleagues, so therefore he would call him by his personal name. In fact, later in the Masechta, towards the end of the Masechta, we actually have when someone kind of where Isi Barhini is talking with Rabbi Yochanan, and Rabbi Yochanan asks him, so who's the Rosh Hashiva in Bavel? And he tells him, Abba Aricha, and Rabbi Yochanan is upset with that. Now, if Abba was a title of respect, like Rashi says over here, what's wrong with that? But if you say that Abba is his personal name, then he's telling him, how could you call him by his personal name? You have to give him more respect than that. In any case, so Shmuel says, so does Abba, does Rav really require so much that it should wiggle its ear, and only then that shows that it has enough chayus? Shani Omer, Shmuel says, you should know, I argue, and I would say, kol she'enu dronim shan misa oisa. I would say it doesn't need that much. Any kind of pukos, any kind of movement that a dead animal doesn't do, in other words, anything more than hatsas nefesh, is considered pirkus. So in other words, Rashi says like this, by Behema Gasa, we said that sticking out its leg and pulling it back in, like we said in the Mishnah, is considered pirkus. So anything like that, anything that would be considered, Rashi says actually here we're talking about a small animal. So a small animal, anything that wouldn't just be like sas nefesh should be called pirkus. So what do you mean things that an animal would just do as it's dying? Amar Rav Anan, l'didi mifar shalem, inei de mar Shmuel. So Rav Anan says, Shmuel person, mar Shmuel, Reb Shmuel, mar is a title meaning master. So the master, the Rebbe, Shmuel, personally explained to me, posi yod kfufa, if when you shechted the animal, the foreleg was fufa, was bent inward, was retracted, upshatta, and it stuck it out, that would be davashan misoi, so that would be the kind of thing that only an animal just does as it's dying. So therefore, that wouldn't be considered pirkus, and therefore, if the animal was a misopenis, then in fact, that's not a valid reason to be able to eat it. But pshut of a kofafa, but if it was the other way around, that the leg was stuck out, was extended, when the animal was shechted, the kofafa, and then it pulled it back in and bent it, dvarim she'ena misa'oisa, then that would be the kind of thing that death doesn't do that. That would show that was the kind of movement that shows the animal had enough chayus in it at the time of the shechita to be for it to be a valid shechita, that it was still alive at the time. So the Torah Chaim has an interesting vort on that. A person, as long as he's alive, he retracts his hands, like he keeps his hands folded, representing that a person has a certain natural tendency to keep things for himself. So then before a person dies, then he like extends out his hand and opens it as almost like an instinctive thing that at this point I realize I can't take it all with me anyway. I'm going to spread out my hand, I'm extending out my hand and give to others. So therefore, Hashem put this teva in an animal as well so that we can see it and learn a lesson from that. So now again, the animal has a natural tendency to do that, like we're saying, like a person does, to extend out its foreleg, which is an animal's equivalent of a hand, when it's dying, so that's just Hitzos Nefesh. But for it to pull it back in, the same way as a person wouldn't instinctively do that before he dies, neither does an animal, so therefore Shmuel's saying, Rav Anan explains, that Shmuel says that would be considered actual pirus. But Shmuel is saying, Rav was saying things as far as like wiggling its ear or wagging its tail or whatever. Shmuel is saying you don't really need to go that far. Well, the Gemara asks, my Kamash Mon. In that case, if Shmuel is just mentioning about this matter of bending or unbending the foreleg, my Kamash Mon, then what is Shmuel telling us with that? Tanena. We learn in the Mishnah. The Hemadaka Shaposhe Yoda, Valoyachzira, that a small animal, a sheep or a goat, stuck out its foreleg and didn't bring it back. Psula, then it would be possible, shchita, she'ena elai tzos nefesh, because that's just tzos nefesh, that's just its last movement as it's dying, and that doesn't show that it was alive at the time of the shchita. Ha hechzira, now the implication is if the animal did bring back its leg, to where it was before Kshedah, then the Shechita would be kosher. Well, then Shmuel is saying that if it bends back in its foreleg, then it's kosher, so what is Shmuel telling us that we don't learn from the Mishnah? And the answer is imi masnisim. If you only had what it says in the Mishnah, have amino, then you would say davka de kaifo poshta v'hoder kaifala. When would it work? Only if the animal's leg was bent inward at the time of the shechita, then it extended it out and then bent it back in. So then you would say that's enough. So did two motions, one outward, one inward. That would be enough to show that would be enough to demonstrate pirkus. But if the animal's leg was already extended beforehand, before you started the shechita, and then it just bent it inward, lo, you wouldn't know, maybe that's not considered pirkus. The same way, as the Mishnah said that if it just extended it outward, it would just be hetzos nefesh, maybe just pulling it inward is also considered just hetzos nefesh. The Mashmalam, therefore, Shmuel is telling us that just bringing it inward is in fact considered pirkus. So yes, extending outward would be like the Torah Chaim says. That's an instinct that Hashem put in animals, so that we human beings can take a lesson from that and realize that you can't keep your hand grasping and take it all with you. But when it comes to pulling in, that's against that, and therefore that goes against that, and therefore it shows the animal was still alive at the time of the shechita, and this was a conscious movement on its part. In fact, the Ram points out, it comes out from the Gemara over here that Rav would disagree with that. Rav would say that it would in fact have to be a motion in both directions. If at the time of Shechita the leg was bent in and then it pulled it out and then back in, then in fact that would be Pirkus, but just a one directional movement. Like Shmuel says, according to Rav, would not be valid Pirkus. Okay? The Gemara says Mesvi. Then I have a contradiction on Rav, where Rav, who's telling us that it needs to be, for example, if the animal mooed or defecated or wiggled its tail or whatever, but the Abraisa says Rav Yosi and Mahoyer of Meir. Rav Yosi says that a Meir used to say Goya b'shas shchita ein zepirkus. If the animal, again, this misukenes, just moves at the time of shchita, that's not considered pirkus. Rav Elazar Rav Yosi Omer Mishmoy, and Rav Elazar Rav Yosi says in the name of Rav Yosi, his father, Afilu hitilu ri'i v'kishkisha, even if it defecated, or even if it, or even if it wiggled, or if it kishkisha b'znava, or even if it wiggled its tail, ain't a pirkus, that wouldn't be considered pirkus. So meaning, now the Mishnah had mentioned wiggling its tail, so evidently then that would be only according to the mayor. That would be only according to the mayor. Rav Elazar Rav Yosi's version of it would be that wiggling its tail is not considered pirkus either. Well, kasha goya goya, kasha rei rei. Well, then you have a contradiction then, because Rav had said that the animal mooing or the animal is considered pirkus, and the Braisa is saying that not. And the same thing, Rav had said that the animal defecating is considered pirkus, and the Braisa is saying that not. Now, fine, you could answer, obviously, that there's other opinions other than Rameir, but than Rav Yosi quoting Rameir, and Rav Elazar Rav Yosi quoting Rameir, but we don't seem to find them. If anything, all the other opinions in the Mishnah are more stringent than that. So where is Rav getting that these things would be enough to be considered a pirkus? So my answer is goya goya like kasha. When it comes to the animal mooing, there's no contradiction. Hod avi kola, hod ami kola. It depends whether it's mooing with a strong sound. Avi literally means a heavy sound. So when it makes the normal kind of loud moo that it does when it's alive, no question that means the animal is still alive enough that that even though it's a misukenes, it was surviving until the point of the shchita when it actually dies, and then it's good. Hod ami kola, as opposed to the price is talking about where it was like a weak kind of moo, so that doesn't show that it was alive enough during the entire shchita for it to be considered a shchita. And as far as defecating, there's also no contradiction. Because the Braisa is talking about where it just dribbled out, kind of, so it lands right in it, light, it lands the waste that it puts out lands right near the body. So then that means, in other words, that doesn't mean that it had any chayos. It means basically that the muscles relaxed enough to let it out. Kind of much as this, as opposed to Rav is talking about where squirted it or whatever, or threw it just further away, which shows that it actually had muscular chayos to be able to do that, and therefore that shows that despite being a misukenes, it actually survived until late enough in the shchita process that it'll be kosher. So no contradiction from that braisa on Rav. As far as the halacha, usually we have in dinim of Isser and Heter, usually the halacha is like Rav against Shmuel, but over here the poskim seem to pass him like Shmuel, maybe because fine, we asked this question from the Braisa on Rav and we answered it, but maybe we would say that still it's a little bit of a doichak to understand that way, to draw those distinctions, and therefore we should say that we go like Shmuel, that even if it just sticks out its foreleg, etc., is good enough. So it actually is then. So we actually distinguish between, so in halacha we distinguish between when it comes to a behema daka, when it comes to small cattle, when it comes to small livestock, sheep and goats, or when it comes to chaya, any kind, gaso daka, then we say if it stuck out its foreleg and brought it back, or stuck out its foreleg even without bringing it out, or just stuck it back in, then that's pirkus. If it just stuck out its leg, then it would just be hotzas nefesh. As far as cattle, then either one, your movement in either direction, is considered pirkus and it's valid. And then by birds, we're going to talk about further in the Gemara what the din is as far as that, what they need to do in order for it to be valid pirkus. The Gemara continues, Amar of Chisa, Pirkus Sha'omru. This Pirkus that we're talking about in the Mishnah, that we say that the animal has to do Pirkus, has to do this jerky movement in order for it to be considered a kosher shchita when it was a Masakenes. So Rav Chisda says, I heard from my Rabbein, the Soif shchita. Then it means it has to take place at the end of the shchita. Now, says Rav Chisda, I understand that to mean, my Soif shchita, what does that mean? The Emsa shchita. It really means in the middle of the shechita. It did a pirkus in the middle of the shechita, shows, therefore, that by the end, that it was obviously alive until the end of the shechita. La poki tchilas shechita deloy. In other words, Rav Chisda says, when it says soif shechita, doesn't literally mean the end of the shechita, it just means it can't be only by the beginning of the shechita. If it just did that pirkus by the beginning, that wouldn't show that it had enough chayas to survive until the middle of the shechita. But it doesn't have to be, says Rav Chisda, that literally after you finish the shchita, after you cut both simonim, then it still does that movement. Rav Chisda says that's not necessary. And Rav Chisda says, Menorah min Allah, where do I get that from? How do I know that? Ditan, because let's look at what our Mishnah said. Behema dakash aposh the yod v'lo yachzira. We said if a small type animal, a sheep or a goat, stuck out its foreleg, but v'lo yachzira, but didn't bring it back to, didn't pull it back to its place, psula. So then we said it's possible. Now we have to ask Amos, at what point in the shchita are we talking about that the animal did this? Are you talking about after the shchita, and you're telling me that it stuck out its leg, and that's not considered pirkus? Why? How long are you expecting the animal to live? I mean, we're talking after the shchita at this point. In other words, we're saying, this kind of motion, this kind of moving its leg outward is just hatsas nefesh. So sort of Chisda is saying that, wouldn't it have lived It would have lived longer if it hadn't been shechted. So in other words, how can you call that just hatsas nefesh and just dismiss that as that's just a convulsive movement? The fact is, we're after the shechita at this point, and that should be considered that means that it was a perfectly valid shechita. It lived long enough until the end of the shechita. What do you care? What happened afterwards? In other words, the question is, I mean, look, it has to be hatsas nefesh, it has to give off its soul, it has to die with the shchita, so why are you saying that it had hatsas nefesh, then it's possible. So therefore, it must be that what we want is, the pirkus we're looking for is in the middle of the shchita, and therefore now it didn't do that, now in the middle of the shchita it does that, then it means it's doing hatsas nefesh in the middle of the shchita, and that's a problem, because it has to die only at the end of the shchita. Evidently, evidently, therefore, what we require is that it should be in the middle of the shchita. Rashi and Tosfos are explaining slightly differently. Rashi says that just the vote is that, look, you don't require the animal to live after the shchita. Obviously, after the shchita, it's going to be dead. So what's the problem? But Tosfos is saying, and the Baal HaMor says similarly that we're saying Mipnesha Enon Hitz Ela Hitzos Nefesh Bovad, because it's Hitzos Nefesh. Well, at the end of Shchita is when it's supposed to be Hitzos Nefesh. So therefore, it must be that we're talking about in the middle of the Shchita. Amalei Rava, but Rava says to the Chisda, that's not really a proof. La'olam b'sof Shchita, maybe indeed the Pirkos does have to be only at the end of the Shchita. And you're going to say then, so what do you mean? Does the animal have to live after the shchita? Or what does the Mishnah mean with that word, hatsas nefesh bovad, which when else is the hatsas nefesh supposed to be if not the shchita? Says Rav Shani Omer, I could say, kosha in oisa came the safe shchita. If an animal does not do that after the shchita, via duash and ismashin, then we know that its neshama had left it before that, and therefore it would be nevela. So in other words, you're right, the animal doesn't have to live after the shchita per se, but if it's not able to reflexively do that kind of motion after the shchita, then it means that it died at an earlier point and not as a result of the shchita. So no proof from that it would have to do it in the middle of the shchita. Maybe indeed the expected time for it to be done is at the end of the shchita. So you have Rav Chisda's opinion and you have Rava questioning him. Rav Nachman Yitzchak has a different version altogether. He says, Pirkus Sha'amur B'tchilas Shchita. The Pirkus that we're talking about And even if it did it at the beginning of the Shchita, then that's good enough. It shows, in other words, that if it did that Pirkus at the beginning of Shchita, then that would be enough. Because even though it was Mr. Kenneth, because of the fact that it did that at the beginning means it had enough chayus to be able to survive until the appropriate point of the Shchita. And Rav Nachman Yitzchok says, where do I get that from? So it's not also because the Mishnah continues. Amar Rav Shimon Hashchecha Balayla. That Rav Shimon said a person shechts at night, and he can't see whether there was pirkus or not. And we said in the Mishnah also, we had Rabbi Eliezer saying daya in zinko. We said it's enough if the animal caused a gush of blood by doing that last groan or something as it's being shechted, and that forces a lot of blood out of the lungs, and therefore it makes a big gush or a big flow of blood, like we talked about yesterday. So Reb Shimon said, you shechted at night, you didn't see whether that took place. So the Macher Matzah Ksalim Malayim Dam, and the next day he found the walls full of blood. Ksheira, then we know the animal is kosher, Shizinka, because obviously it did Zinka, obviously it caused that gush of blood to come out, Kamidas Rabbi Eliezer, following Rabbi Eliezer's opinion, that saying that Zinka is enough. And the Omer Shmuel, and we know that Shmuel says that when it says Ksalim, it doesn't mean the walls of the Shlachtos or something, Kosli based Shita Sheminu. What we mean is the walls, meaning the sides, the outer sides of the neck. If they're covered with blood, in other words, had it not been Zinka, then you wouldn't have the sides of it would be covered with blood. There would be blood in the neck and maybe a little bit dribbling down the sides or whatever. When you see the kosle based shchita, the outer walls of the neck are covered with blood, then it shows that zinka, it shows that it caused this gush of blood. Now, says Rav Nachman Yitzchok, if you say that what we require in the case of a mesukenes, that the pirkos of the zinuk should take place at the beginning of the shchita shaper, then we understand that it means, in other words, that we find it covered with blood. And that means, in other words, so when did it take place? Fine, it was already at the beginning of the Shchita, and that's good enough. Eli Yavit Besef Shchita, but if you're telling me that you have to have it take place at the end of the Shchita, or like Rav Chista had said, Sof Shchita would be in the middle of the Shchita, so what good does it do to find the walls, to find the sides of the neck full of blood? Leichosh Dover B'Tchilas Shchita Zinka. Maybe you have to be concerned that zinka took place at the beginning of the shchita, and therefore now it all got full of blood. But that wouldn't show that wouldn't demonstrate that it was in fact that it was in fact at the end. Meaning, Rashi says, if when we said solim malayim dam, the walls full of blood, and it meant literally the walls of the shlachtos, then we would be able to tell, Rashi says, because then you can tell which part of the shchita that took place during. Because if it was at the beginning of the shchita, then it would be, you would tend to find it higher up on the wall. If you find it lower down on the wall, then you would know it was in the middle of the shchita, because at that point the animal didn't have enough strength to be able to cause the blood to spurt so high up. So if we're talking about you have to check the walls, then it's easy enough to tell at what point in the shchita it took place. But now we're talking about that solim malayim dam doesn't mean the walls of the building, of the room. It means the walls, the side of the neck. Then there's no way to know when in the shchita it happened, at the beginning or in the middle or at the end. So Tosfos points out, fine, it's maybe not so common for the zinuk, for the spurt of blood to happen at the beginning of the shchita. Rava would take the view that maybe it more normally happens at the end. But the Gemara is asking, but Rav Nachman Yitzchok is not saying not necessarily. It could equally well happen in the beginning. And if you're telling me that the only way you're going to know is by checking the next morning, then how would you know? So therefore, that demonstrates, says Rav Nachman Yitzchok, that obviously it's not an issue, and no matter when in the shchita it happens, it's good enough. Fine, the halacha may not be like Reb Shimon, as for the halacha may not be like Reb Eliezer and like Reb Shimon, that zinuk is enough, but the basic concept, in other words, they're not arguing on the basic concept that there has to be pirkus, and that it has to take place at a certain point in the shchita. They're just arguing what kind of motion is strong enough to be considered pirkus. So therefore, if Reb Shimon is telling us that it's enough to just see that there was blood on the outside of the neck, showing that there was zinuk, And that could be any, and on the face of it, that could be any time during the shchita, then that would show that pirkus is fine any time during the shchita, and not like Rav Chista is saying davka at the end. not like Rav Chisda is saying in the middle, or like Rav is saying dafka at the end. But the Gemara says that's not really a proof. The Dilma Shiny Zinuk to Odif. Maybe you could say that Zinuk is actually better than the other ones because it shows a greater chayus. The fact that the animal was able to whatever exactly causes the zinuk, cough or groan or whatever that forces a lot of blood out, that shows that it had a fair amount of chayus still at that point, and that causes a lot of blood to spurt out. So maybe you could say that kind of thing helps at the beginning of the shechita. But the other kinds of pirkus, which are weaker, maybe you do need them specifically in the middle according to Chisda or at the end according to Rava. So Gemara says, "Me odif." Yeah, but are you telling me that zinuk is better than the other ones? No, v'hotznam, he said on the mission of Rabbi Yezer, I'm a daya in zinka. Rabbi Yezer had said it's enough if the animal is zinka. Implying, in other words, Rabbi Gamliel, or Rabbi Shimon Gamliel in the beginning of the Mishnah, is saying that you need a pirkus of it moving its full leg, and of the animal moving its full leg and its hind leg. So Rabbi Yezer is daya in zinka. It's enough if zinka that's less movement than the foreleg and the hind leg, and nevertheless that's good enough. So therefore you see that obviously zinuk is not very strong compared to pirkus. So he's coming to be maple. So you can't say that zinuk is stronger than the other ones. Then in that case, Rav Nachman Yitzchak's proof is a very good one, that Rav Shimon is allowing zinuk, even though we don't know whether it happened in the beginning, the middle, or the end. And the answer is no, because when Rav Eliezer says daya, it's enough, he just means kalman didam gamli over odif midrabanan. He means that the pirkus that he's talking about, the zinka, is indeed weaker than Rav Gamliel's, but it's stronger than what the Rabbanan are requiring. Rav Gamliel is requiring that it moves both its foreleg and its hind leg. So that kind of thing definitely shows that it had a lot of chayus when it came to during the shechita itself. Rav Eliezer is saying, no, you don't need as much, all you need is zinuk. But zinuk is still, we would say, still a stronger thing than what the Chachamim are saying, which is that it has to do just a foreleg or just a hind leg. So you can use the word daya relative to Rav Gamliel or Shimon Gamliel, but it still would be a stronger pirkus. And if Rav Shimon is saying, based on what Rav Eliezer says, that this zinka, which again is stronger even than a foreleg or hind leg according to the Chachamim, if he's allowing, even that we don't know when the zinka took place during the shechita because it was by night and we couldn't see, and we only find the evidence of it tomorrow morning, so then Rav Nachman Yitzchak's proof is valid that it would be good enough whether it was at the beginning, the middle, or the end of the shechita. So in other words, but actually no, we're still left with a question on Rav Nachman Yitzchak. No, it's not that we proved Rav Nachman Yitzchak's point. On the contrary, then we have a question on him in the Mishnah. Yes, Rav Eliezer is saying daya in zinka, which makes it sound like zinka is weaker. But no, it's stronger than what the Chachamim do. So maybe fine with the zinka, it's so strong, such a strong evidence of the chayus of the animal that it's good enough by the beginning. But maybe the pirkos that the Chachamim are requiring, a foreleg or a hind leg, maybe that dafka has to be in the middle or the end of the shechita, like Rav Chisda and Rava. Where are you getting that? That also can be at the beginning and it's good enough. So the answer is Amar Ravina, Omri Sama Bar Chilkoi, so Sama Bar Chilkoi, the name of an Amora, explained to me, he said, Akshi Bar Avod Bar Avogram, the father of Bar Avogram asked pointed out this question. Bar Avogram would mean the son of Avogram. Avod Bar Avogram then sounds repetitious, it means Avogram itself. Rashi explains that the son was better known than the father, and therefore, the son was well known, the father not so much. So therefore, they called Avogram himself the father of the son of Avogram. And another possibility, Shittim Kovetsis brings that the son's name itself was the double name, Bar Avogram, and then his father was called the father of Bar Avogram, meaning that was his son who was better known than him. Anyway, V'Amri Lo, or another version, is that it wasn't the father of Bar Avogram, but Achur de Bar Avogram, the brother of Bar Avogram. In which case, then it would mean that it was another son of Avogram. Whatever the case, and again, we would say that one brother was more famous than the other. Whatever the case, so he said, so he had asked the question against the question we just said. Again, we're right now we have the question on Rav Nachman Yitzchak. How could you say just because Zinka is good enough at the beginning of the Shechita, therefore moving the foreleg or the hind leg should also be good enough. And therefore, you're wondering, and how can Rav Nachman Yitzchak say that? So this avur or achur, the Bar Avram pointed out, you're assuming that Rabbi Eliezer's zinuk is more of an indicator of chayus than that of the Rabbanan. But is it really so? I mean, the Rabbanan be odif? Is it in fact more of an indicator of chayus, a stronger thing than what the Rabbanan are saying? Vatnan. We say in the Mishnah, v'chamraimim, that it won't be kosher, ad shetufakus, over yad, over regal. V'cham say, it's only kosher, only if it moves either its foreleg or its hind leg. Now this expression, ad shetufakus, implies, in other words, what you're saying, Rabbi Eliezer, is not good enough for us. We require something stronger, namely that it moves its foreleg or its hind leg. Now we have to figure out Rabbanan Heyakainu on what are the Chachamim saying when you say Ein Ad Shetufakus. Ilema Ad Rav Gamliel. Are they referring back to Rav Gamliel that it needs a foreleg and a hind leg? No, because then they're not being more machmir than him. Of course not, because they're requiring only one or the other. Kivin Shetirkus Ami Bar Leg. Then they shouldn't be saying Ad Shetufakus, which implies what you said is not good enough. We need something stronger. Just the opposite. They should be saying Kivin Shetirkus. Once it gets Tirkus with one or the other, then we consider it good enough. Obviously, the Chachamim are referring back to what Rabbi Eliezer says. That's Rabbi Eliezer saying Zinka, and they're saying that's not good enough. The E Odif. Now, if Zinka is stronger than Pirkus, the Chachamim are saying, my ad, then again, why would they be using the word ad, which implies what you said is not good enough? Well, therefore, so the father or the brother of Bar Avram pointed out, and in turn, Sama Bal Chokoi reported to Ravina that this was the point that was brought up. Obviously, therefore, no, we can't say that Rabbi Eliezer's zinuk is stronger than that of the Chachamim. Rather, it's the other way around. It's weaker. It's a weaker sign of chayus. And if, nevertheless, Rav Shimon is saying, based on Rabbi Eliezer's opinion, that it's good enough for us to find the next morning that there was Zinuk, even though now we're saying, based on the wording of the Mishnah, we would say that Zinuk is the least indicator of Chayus, weaker even than the Chachamim. So in other words, the flow of the Mishnah would be, Rav Gamliel or Rav Shimon Gamliel is saying you need a very strong indicator of Pirkus, the foreleg and the hind leg. Rabbi Eliezer says, on the contrary, you need the least amount of Pirkus, just Zinka. And the Chachamim is saying, no, we don't need as much as Rav Gamliel was saying, but we don't need as little, if not good enough, as little as Rabbi Eliezer is saying. Ad Shetufakus, the Ad Obedagel, it has to actually move a foreleg or a hind leg. So then it comes out from that flow of the Mishnah that Rabbi Eliezer is the least machmir opinion. He requires only Zinka. And it comes out from what Rabbi Shimon is saying, that Zinka is good enough even if we don't know whether it was at the beginning, the middle, or the end. Because again, you won't know that ever because you're only going to find the evidence of the Zinka in that the outside of the neck is covered with blood the next morning. And we still see that's good. So Rav Nachman Yitzchak's proof from the Mishnah is, after all, solid proof that it would be good enough for the Pirkus to be by the beginning, the middle, or the end. So not like Rav Chista Davka in the middle, and not like Rava Davka, and not like Rava at the end. So the Gemara continues, Rava Amar. Rava says, no, Pirkus Tramur B'Sof Shchita. No, when we're talking about Pirkus, it has to Davka be at the end of the Shchita. So before, Rava had argued with Rav Chista and saying, maybe you could say that when you learned from your Rebbeim, that it means Besof Shchita, and you said that to mean in the middle of the Shchita, and Rava says, maybe it means Davka at the end. So now Rava is saying that actually that is in fact what it means. It does have to be at the end of the Shchita. It's not good enough at the beginning, like Rav Nachman Yitzchak says, or like in the middle, like Rav Chista says, it has to be at the end. And the logic is, in other words, that if it does it at the end, then it shows it was still alive up to that point, and that's good because you need it to be alive up to that point. You need it to not have died during the Shchita. But if you find it, if you did it only at the beginning of the Shchita or the middle, then it doesn't mean it was still alive till the end of the Shchita. In fact. In fact, there's machlokas rishonim about this. Do we mean that? Do we mean that Rava is requiring shita? And some of them are medayek from Rashi's words over here that you need it at the end of the shita and continuing after the shita. So Rabbi Yerucham talks like that, and the Shachar, and the Shachar explains that. On the other hand, the Maharshal and the Bach talk about that. And then they explain that. So then Rabbi Yerucham explains that Tosfos would say that no, and the Rashba hold it doesn't have to be after the Shita; it just does at the time at the end of the Shita. So you have machlokas within that itself, what it means the sof shita. Does it mean at the end and then continuing afterwards, or was it enough that it did it at the end, and that's that? Now, where Tosfos had pointed out, again, that Rava is not bothered by the proof from Zinka, because he says it's uncommon for the Zinka to take place early on in the shita. It's common for it to take place at the end. So therefore, if we find the outside of the neck full of blood, the likelihood is that the Zinka took place at the end, and that's fine. The end is when Rava is requiring it. The Rashba gives a different explanation that Rava may disagree with Shmuel about the definition of koslin. The Mishnah had said if you find the walls full of blood, and Shmuel had said that means the walls, meaning the sides of the neck. So the Rashba explains Rava may disagree with that and say no, it means the walls of the room. And in that case, like Rashi had said, it's easy enough to tell when during the shita it took place, because you'll see where the blood is, whether it's higher up or lower down. So yet another possibility, the Ra'ah, who argues a lot with the Rashba, gives a different explanation that no, Reb Shimon, who would say that Zinuk is enough, then he would say that it's good enough at the beginning of the Shita, but that doesn't mean the other Chachamim would hold, and maybe in other words, he disagrees with the Chachamim on two points, whether Zinuk is good enough, and whether it needs to be, and whether it can be at the beginning of the Shita or not. But Rava is saying that according to the Chachamim, according to the Halacha, it would have to be at the end of the Shita. Omar Rava Menam in Allah. So Rava says, where do I get that from? That it has to be davke at the end. So the Tanya, we learn in a Braisa. The pasuk says, "Shor a chesed ve'ez ki yivoled." Let's quote the whole pasuk. We have it in Yom Tov Kriya. "Shor a chesed ve'ez ki yivoled." If an ox or a sheep or a goat is born, v'hoya shivas yomim tachas imay, so it has to remain with its mother for 7 days, and then v'miyem hashmini v'hola, and from the 8th day on, you can bring it as a korban. So look at Darshan. The phrases in the pasuk when it says an ox or a sheep. So now the Torah could have said shor v'chesev v'ez. It could have said a vav between them, because even though vav means and, it here in this case obviously it means individually each animal. So ksap b'kilayim, then therefore that comes to exclude the oy chesef, implying there's a distinction between them, means as opposed to a kilayim. If you had an animal that was crossbred, from if you have two animals were crossbred and they had a baby, that baby would be possible for a korban. So oy eiz prap nidna, when it continues, or a goat, that teaches us not a nidna. Sometimes you have a mutant animal that was born from two parents of the same species, but it resembles a different animal. So if kilayim would be, for example, that you mated together a female sheep together with a male goat, and the baby is half sheep, half goat. But then the nidme would be, you have a male and a female goat, but the baby is the baby has a mutation that makes it look more like a sheep. So that's also possible for a korban. When it continues, ki yivoled, if it is born, that means proper yotze dofen, means as opposed to if the baby was born by C-section. Because the word yivoled implies, so either the word yivoled implies that it was born normally, that's how Rabbeinu Gershon learns it. Tosfos says that no, it's actually, we learn gzeira shava from the word born, from the word leida, by a bechor, where in turn, we learn from Ishek, he says, Rebbe Yolda, that we learn that we're talking about a normal birth, so then we learn from that to a bechor, and in turn we learn from that to this dinim of korbanos, that all korbanos cannot be from an animal that was born by C-section. The pasuk continues, shivas yamim, you have to allow the baby to be with his mother for 7 days. That means krat mechusas man. So that means exactly what it sounds like, as opposed to you can't bring the animal as a korban when it's not yet 7 days old. You have to wait for its 8th day. When it says tachas imay, when it says it has to be together with his mother, means maybe it doesn't have to be maybe with the mother the whole 7 days, but at least it has to be proper yosan. It can't mean a baby that was born orphaned where the mother died in childbirth. Such an animal would be possible for a korban. Now, let's focus on that yosan, says Rava, and we're going to have a proof from that of what's going on over here. Hi yosan, hey figami, what's the scenario with this yosan? You're talking about that the mother gave birth to the baby and then died. So what's the problem? Why is the baby possible for a korban? Are you expecting the mother to live forever? She was alive for a short time after the baby was born. And after all, the pasuk is certainly not telling you that you certainly can't say that the pasuk is telling you that the mother has to be alive the whole 7 days. Rashi brings from Toras Koyim, from the Medrash Halacha, on that pasuk. That shows that not. Once it says tachas imoy, and a different positive says ye im imoy, with his mother, all you require is that she was alive long enough to be considered his mother. Tachas imoy means basically not so much together with his mother. Literally, tachas means under, but it can also mean instead of. So it means, in other words, as long as he's alive, instead of she died and the baby is still alive, then that's good. But it needs to be at least that there was a certain period of time when she could be called imoy. So therefore, all it has to be is that she survived the birth a little bit. Ella, the mace of a hundred year day. Are you talking about that the mother died? Continues Rava. Are you talking about the mother died and then the baby was born? And in that case, how would that work? Well, obviously, it would be they had to do an emergency C-section. Well, then the Kiyah Volid Nafka. Then anyway, we learned that it's possible because Kiyah Volid, because we said that means not a baby born by C-section. So you wouldn't need a special thing in the pasuk to be memayit this. Tosfos points out, by the way, that there's other gemaras in Bava Basra and in Nida that say that when it's talking about human women, but in any case, that when a pregnant mother dies, Rahman al-Flan, then the baby tends to die first because it has less chayus, it has less life force than she does. So she managed to live long enough, but it means the baby had already died before that. So how would we have over here? Tosfos says that the Tosfos assumes that what's true of human beings is true of animals, which is actually not so simple in itself. We're going to talk about that in the beginning of the next parak as far as Trefus, that's the Shem. But in any case, Tosfos right now is assuming that it's the same thing over here. So then in that case, so what do you mean? The mother died and the baby would conceivably still be alive such that you could cut it out. So Tosfos distinguishes because there's a difference how the mother died. Did it die on its own, or was it killed? So in other words, he would be talking about. Let's say the mother animal was killed in whatever way without shvita, and then the baby can still very well be alive in it. And we would be saying that now we cut it open and we take out the baby. Fine, but that's a C-section, and the baby is anyway possible for a korban because of that. So you wouldn't need a special posit for that. Ella pshita. So Rava says, obviously it must be that we're talking about that was born normally, and the mother actually died in childbirth. So what happened was zet pirush lamisa. At that moment, the mother left and then went to death, and the baby came to life. And it was the moment the mother died, then the baby was born. But it wasn't there was no overlap between them, and therefore the animal is a yosim, and therefore it's possible. Now, says Rava, what's the relevance of it to our business over here about Pirkus? If you tell me that when you have an animal that's on the verge of death and you require it to show some sign of chayus at the end of the birth, and if not, then it means that it died during the birth, and therefore the baby is considered a yosan. So, then we understand why the pasuk needs to tell us that you can't bring this baby as a korban. You can't learn it from Yotze Dofen because the animal was born normally without having to be cut out. But Rava says if you don't require chayus at the end of the birth. Lomalei, then why would we need the word tachas imoy? Why would we need the drosha to tell us that a yosim is possible? Miki yivolid nafka. You could learn it from the word ki yivolid because if the mother dies before the birth is completed, then it still wasn't born normally because even if you're going to say it came out of the womb in the normal way, it didn't have to be cut out, that still wouldn't be called a leda. It wouldn't be called a birth because the definition of a birth is that it comes from a live, that it comes from a live animal. Therefore, the fact that the Torah has to specifically tell us that a yosim is possible, unless the mother actually survived until the end of the birth. So therefore, you see that when you're talking about something where you're talking about that the animal has to be considered alive until a certain point, then it means it has to be at the end. So now, returning to our point, as far as shchita, it means that there has to be chayos at the end of the shchita and not in the beginning or the middle of it. And again, according to some rishonim as well, you need even a little bit after that. Therefore, as far as the shchita, it can't even be. In fact, the Tavur Shor on these dinim and Shulchan Aruch points out that the same way as by the yosim, we have to be talking about that the mother survived the birth by even a little bit of a time. The same way it would have to be that the animal is considered to be alive until a certain amount of time. So fine, the shchita marks the death of the animal, but nevertheless, in the case of the Mesitenes over here, you have to be able to show at the end of the shchita, and maybe even a little bit after it, that it had enough chayos that it means it survived the shchita. The same way as over here, we would say it has to be that it survived the birth. So that would show that in fact you have to have the pupils at the end and not at the beginning and not at the middle. Tosfos brings up a point over here that we have in some places in Shas called Efshalot Samsim or E-Efshalot Samsim. You have two things that happen simultaneously. Did they really happen simultaneously, or is there really a fraction of a second between them, and we can't really figure it out? So Tosfos points out, in other words, that we would say, let's say, for example, the Yohan Navi came and told us, or to put it in modern terms, we had a video camera over there, and we actually saw the two things literally happen in the same instant. Nevertheless, we would still say that we would have thought the animal is kosher, and therefore for a korban, and therefore the Torah is telling us that it's not considered a yosim. So we see that the mother has to show a certain degree of chayos until the end of the birth to show that it was alive throughout the whole birth. In the same way, the animal has to be able to show a certain degree of chayos throughout the shchita and even a tiny bit after it to show that it was alive during the shchita. So, finishing off, what's the actual halacha? Omar Rava Hilchasa. So Rava says the halacha is as follows. Ki homas nisa, as the following braisa. The Bryce says as follows, Behema Daka Shaposh Yod Vlayakira, if a small animal or sheep or goat was Mesukenes, and it only stuck out its foreleg but didn't pull it back, then like we said in the Mishnah Psula, then it's possible because that's just Hitzos Nefesh. But Medvaram Yad, however, when would that apply? Only to the foreleg. But when it comes to the hind leg, which is larger and takes more chayus to be able to move that, ben kofa v'le poshta, whether it just extended it outward and didn't pull it back in, or pulled it back in and didn't extend it, chera, then it would be kosher because that's considered pirkus. Because the hind leg takes more energy to move than the foreleg. Continues the braisa. And then Rava is saying the halacha is like this braisa. All this is only talking about as far as small livestock, sheep and goats. Aval begasa, but with larger animals, with cattle. Bein biyad, bein beregel. Whether it moved its foreleg or its hind leg. Bein poshta v'le kofa, bein kofa v'le poshta. Whether it extended it outward and didn't pull it back in, or pulled it in and didn't extend it outward, kshera, then it would be kosher. That's considered pirkus. Rashi explains because a behema gasa, a log, cattle don't usually do that as they're dying. Behema daka often does that when it dies, but behema gasa does not. And again, the idea would be the biological idea behind it would be that a behema gasa, because its forelegs and hind legs are much larger, so even a foreleg takes a lot more energy to move, and therefore shows that it had that energy and it had that chayus. And continues the braisa, the oif, as far as a bird, afilu loy rifrif el agapa, even if it just wiggled its wing, or different gears that some of you showing him have, is the eno, its eye, it just winked with its eye, the like kishkish el aznavai, or it only wiggled its tail, how is a pirkus, that would be considered pirkus, and it's kosher. So by a bird, you need very little in order to demonstrate pirkus. So therefore, so Rava is saying the halacha is like that braisa, by an animal. Before, we also mentioned wiggling the tail, and pointed the Ramza, and the point is the Ramban, and a number of other Rishonim point out the piddush of it is by an animal. You could say, again, the tail is relatively heavy, so if it moves it would be considered pirkus. By a bird, you wouldn't know that, and therefore the Braisa has to stress to us that nevertheless, by a bird, such a thing is caution. So the Gemara says, my kamash malon, well, what is Rava telling us by telling us the halacha is like this Braisa? Kulu tanani. We learned all these things already in the Mishnah. So, because the Mishnah says behema daka shaposhta yod v'lo yachzira, we said that if small livestock, sheep or goats, just stretch out its hand and doesn't pull it back, psula, then the shvita is possible, shein elai tzas nefesh, because that's just giving out its life. That's not a valid pirkus. And the fact that it says yoda means yad ein regaloi, when it says its foreleg, means daka the foreleg, not the hind leg. And when it says daka, means daka ein gasaloi, that this rule applies only to small livestock, not to large ones, to cattle. So what is the chiddush that Rava is telling us from this braisa? And the answer is, oif, it's tzurchaloi deloi tzanan. Because the chiddush is about a bird. It didn't say anything in the Mishnah about a bird, and therefore we need to know that, and that we know from the braisa. In fact, the Bartanura on the Mishnah, not the Bartanura, the Koilo Remez, Moshe Zakuto, explained in his Pirush on the Mishnah that precisely because we're saying by bird, all you need is the tiniest amount of movement, therefore the Mishnah didn't bother mentioning it. Now, the Mishnah also had not talked about, as far as a wild animal, when we talked about the halacha before, the post can explain that wild animals for this purpose, all kinds, even whether we're talking about smaller ones like deer, or whether we're talking about larger ones like buffalo or whatever, all of those have the same din as behema daka, and with all of them, we're saying you need a larger amount of movement for it to be considered pirkus. So the Mishnah hadn't mentioned that either. Because we're saying it's the same thing. So the bottom line is, you have three different categories. You have behema gasa, cattle. You have behema daka, cow. You have behema daka, sheep and goats, and also all wild kosher animals. And then you have birds. So by behema daka, you need the most amount of pirkus. By behema, and again, that includes all wild animals. By behema gasa, by cattle, you need less. And by birds, you need even less than that. And all of this, we're saying, Rava had proved that you need it at the end of the shchita and not at the beginning or the middle in order for it to be kosher. Again, all of this only talking about when the animal is misakenis, not talking about a normal, healthy animal. There, you don't need any of the above. Because like we said yesterday, the shchita mekubetza says, practically speaking, the animal might be stunned into immobility by feeling the shchita knife on its neck, and therefore the fact that it didn't move doesn't mean much. The Mishnah says, if a person shechts an animal for goy, shechitasik shera, then the shechita is kosher. Now we're going to learn later on in the sugya that if an animal was shechted the shema vadizara, then it's also bahana, because it's considered zivche mesim, it's a korban of a vadizara. So here we're talking about the animal belongs to a goy, and you a yid are shechting on his behalf, then we're not worried about the goy's machshava. We're not worried about what he might be thinking in terms of avodah zarah. We don't say, in other words, there's a concept called stam machsheves goy avodah zarah. That's by default, a goy's thoughts are about avodah zarah. The Tanakhama is saying it's not a problem. Rabbi Eliezer though says it's possible because he says that the goy's thought is on avodah zarah, and therefore be considered a korban in honor of avodah zarah. So now, in fact, it's not just possible, actually, it would actually be also ba'na, but since the Chacham had said kosher, then since the Chacham had said trader, then Rabbi Eliezer says psula. Omer Rabbi Eliezer, and Rabbi Eliezer says, afilu shochta lechol oiv kechav mechatzah kovet shalah, even if a yid shechted the animal and bought, what if he had previously bought the animal from the goy, all of it, except for kezayis of meat in it, except for that the goy is going to eat his portion mechatzar kovet shala from the diaphragm of the animal. It doesn't dafka mean that; it just means some part of the animal. But in other words, the Tosfos points out that you, when in a korban, that would be brought as a korban. But it means not only that, it means any a kazayas of any other meat. So in other words, the yid bought the entire meat of the animal from the goy in advance and tells him, when I shef this animal, I'm going to take most of the meat, but you're taking the kazayas of it. Says Rabbi Yezid, even then, psula, if he does it on behalf of the yid, would be possible. Because by default, a goy is thinking of a zara, and therefore, and when he thinks that, then it means, in other words, that it means that now it becomes a korban for avodah zara. So we'll see in the Gemara more detail about that. But Rabbi Yossi says, no, it's a kal v'chomer. You should say that the goy's thought does not pass all the shchita. When it comes to korbanos, where machshava can pass all them, chutz l'zmane, chutz l'mekomer, as we learned all over the place in zvachim and menachas, nevertheless, what's significant is the thought of the koyin who does the avodah. In the case of shchita, it doesn't have to be a koyin, it can be anybody, but the thought of the one who is doing the avodah is the one that's significant. Well, then when it comes to chulin, where machshava doesn't passel, now where the Gemara is going to eventually ask, what do you mean? That's the exact point we're talking about. Your machshava of a zara is going to passel. So what does Rabbi Yossi mean exactly? But so we'll see in the Gemara what he means exactly. But he's saying that a machshava, certain machshavas do not passel by chulin. Ain't it din shalo yehei hakol heloch ha'achar shoyfet? How much more so that it should just follow the one who shechts? Meaning, says Rabbi Yossi, there's no reason that we should say that the goy who owns the animal, that his machshava should be significant as far as making it be considered zivchei mesim, korbanos of avodah zarah, says Rabbi Yossi, it doesn't matter. So basically, in other words, he's saying, why do the Chachamim say that's fine? So actually, we're going to end up explaining in the Gemara that we have a three-way machlokas. The Tanakhama holds that bechlal, a goy, is not usually thinking of avodah zarah all the time. So therefore, if he says, chef my animal for me, he doesn't have any intention of avodah zarah. Rabbi Eliezer says he does. Rabbi Yossi says, fine, maybe he does, but it doesn't matter. He's not the one who's shefting it, so therefore it doesn't make a difference. So the Gemara starts off by explaining. Hani Tendoi is who did Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yossi. Now, it comes out that all these Tanoim agree with what Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yossi says. The Tanya, Omer Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yossi, Shamaiti Shabbaimim Mefaglin. Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yossi says, I heard from my Rebbeim that the owner of a korban is also able to make it pigle. When we talk about the whole concept of pigle, that if you have in mind to eat the korban or sprinkle the blood, or burn the chalev, chutz l'zmanai, then it becomes tigel. Rabbi Yossi says that not only the koyin who's doing the avoda could do that, could accomplish that, but also the owner of the korban. So we would say all three tanoim in our mishnah agree with that concept. But how does that relate over here to chulin? Tanakama savar, so the Tanakama holds isha mina dechoshiv. If we actually hear the goy saying that he's planning for this to be a korban for avodah zarah, then yes, the animal would be possible. Eloi, but if not, we don't say sham machshava sevet chum avodah zarah loyam yunin. We don't say that a goy is always thinking of avodah zarah, and therefore he plans for this animal to be a korban for avodah zarah. No, we're going to say that he's not thinking of that, and therefore, had we known that he was thinking of that, then it would be possible. But because not, then not. So therefore, only if we hear him say that. Rabbi Eliezer says, no, even if we don't hear from the goy that he's thinking that, we still say that by default, the goy is thinking of avodah zarah, and therefore, any time you shecht an animal for him, he's planning for it to be a korban for avodah zarah. So in other words, they both agree on the underlying premise that if the goy does think that, it will be possible. But the Tanakhama is saying you don't have to worry and assume by default that he's doing that, and Rabbi Eliezer is saying you do. The author of Yossi the Meimah now comes to Rabbi Yossi and says, Afagav the Shamina the Choshev, even if we hear him actually having such a thought, nevertheless, it's kosher. Zemachashav is over le'aminin, because to say that one person is thinking a thought, the owner of the animal is thinking a thought that would make it possible, and the other one is doing the avodah, shechting the animal, le'aminin, we don't say that. In fact, Rashi points out Rabbi Yossi would actually disagree with only the first two Tanoim would agree with Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yossi's premise that the owner of the korban is able to make it pigle. Rabbi Yossi would disagree with that whole premise and say, the same way as by Kodshin, the owner's thought cannot make it possible. In the same way, over here, the owner's thought cannot make it considered a korban for avodah zarah. Okay. That's one version of how we can understand the machlokas. Then there's another version of understanding it. That in fact the argument would be when we actually hear the goy saying that he's thinking that the yid's shita of it should be considered a korban for Avodah Zarah. So the first version was we didn't actually hear him, and the question is, do we have to assume that he's thinking that? But now in the second version, we're saying that only when we hear of him saying that, then that would be the machlokes. Rashi has a girsa afilu b'shamine, that even when we heard him, even then. We would still say that there's a machlokas, where in the first version we said if we hear him, then even the chacham would agree that's possible. But in the second version, we would say that even if we hear him saying that, the chacham would still disagree. Tanakama says, when would we say that if one has the thought and the other one, and the other one is doing the avodah, it's enough to make it pigol hanimila b'fnim? That would only be inside the Beis HaMikdash when it comes to korbanos, namely Rabbi Eliezer of Yossi's rule. But when you're outside the Beis HaMikdash and you're talking about chulin, it wouldn't be. Because they would say, we don't derive what happens outside the Beis HaMikdash from what happens inside it. Just because inside the Beis HaMikdash, according to Rabbi Eliezer ber Yossi, the owner was able to make it pigul, doesn't demonstrate that outside the Beis HaMikdash the same kind of thing should apply, that we should say that therefore the goy's thought is able to make it a korban of Avodah Zarah. Rashi points out, because after all, where do we know that you can't eat korbanos of Avodah Zarah anyway? The pasuk calls them zivchei mesim. Now, the pasuk calls them sacrifices to the dead Avodah Zarah. Now, inside the Beis HaMikdash, you have the expression, the hikriv ha-makriv, the person who's offering the korban, meaning the owner. But b'chutz, outside the Beis HaMikdash, we don't say that. He doesn't have the power to make it zivchei mesim. It has to be the one who actually does the zivcha, the one who does the shchita. But also Rabbi Yezer b'meim al yalfinim. Rabbi Yezer says you could learn yalfinim chutz mipnim. Rabbi Yezer says you could learn what happens outside the Beis HaMikdash, what happens inside it. If, as Rabbi Yezer Rabbi Yossi is saying, the owner is able to make it pigul, then Rabbi Yezer says the same thing. The owner of this animal, the goy, is able to make it zivchei mesim. But also Rabbi Yossi b'meim, and Rabbi Yossi comes and says, again, I disagree with the whole premise. Afilun b'fnim nami. Even inside the Beis HaMikdash, we would not say that one person has the thought and the other one is doing the avodah, and that thought should be able to affect the avodah and make it possible. We're not going to say that, and therefore we certainly wouldn't say it over here by this goy's animal to say that it should become zivchei mesim, but rather we say that his thought, again, in this second version, we're saying even the goy explicitly said, I want it to be the shame of Arizona, then it doesn't matter, says Rabbi Yossi, it still wouldn't matter, and the meat would be perfectly kosher and mutter to eat.